Omar, you bring something different almost each time that you go out, which is a blessing and a challenge for someone like me to describe to readers what to expect when they come to hear you. What are you bringing us to Chicago this time with your Africanos group? Like to go a little bit into some of the African sources that you're drawing from. Most commonly, when you think of mixtures of African Cuban and Afro/Cuban, with a lot of musicians, you're looking at, say, Nigeria, Benin, Congo, Ghana, occasionally going as far north as Senegal and Mali. I was intrigued that you got into Moroccan music, and I'd like you to talk a little about what it was that you found there that made it attractive to you as a source.
It's not mystery inside the Guinawa tradition is they have in their Moluk is the name of the party. They have a colors, and they play music for different kind of colors, and this color have a name. And when you make the syncretismo with the African tradition, you discover what you see is the same. For example, the white is for peace, and for us in the Santeria, the white is for peace, is Opatala, in the Candomblé is Oshala, is Obaba, is the same thing. It's a white color, peace, unity, love, and in Nigeria it's the same thing. You know, for me, the blue, Musawin or Samawin in the Guinawa tradition is a Jemanja, the same color is the honor of the sea. So I was in shock when I started to study this. One of the first things for me was, when I discovered this, by a guy who went out of the tradition, out of the religion, but he played the music of the tradition. I say, what is this, man? I'm so familiar with this. And he explained me, well, this is a Guinawa tradition. Next, this was back in the day, in 1997 or something like this, 97, 98. When I listened to this music, right away, I pick up a plane ticket, I went to Morocco. It's the first time in my life I do this. Actually, the only time, because now we're based in my career, I can go to Mali, to Senegal, to Africa, to South Africa, East Africa. But in the beginning, what was for me to travel, I pick up a plane ticket, I went there and studied a little bit. Yeah, I have a strong connection with the Guinawa tradition. In another dimension, I have Arabic ancestors too. So I'm kind of close to this. Yeah. You know, even in my day by day life, I feel, you know, this kind of North African tradition close to me. You know, I need the incense for my prayers. Even if I practice, Santeria, it's come from West Africa. But you know, more and more I go deeply inside of my tradition. More and more I know we are all brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. and families. The only thing that we need to respect each other and try to present what we know and try to share. Mm-hmm. Our tradition with different tradition, and we're going to come out with beautiful unity and beautiful love and beautiful party sometime. Mm.
So if I understood you correctly, you found a lot of parallels between how the Gnawa tradition is using tone poems and what you would use in music for the Orishas. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, definitely. You know, okay. This is the way I look, you know. I look this kind of tradition. So I always look the parallel of the syncretism between one culture and another culture. Mm-hmm. You know, I look the syncretism with Africa and the Western. You know, boy, if you went to Cuba or to Bahia, you see it's Babaluaye, San Lázaro, Changó, Santa Bárbara, Obatalá, it's La Virgen de las Mercedes. By the way, I live here in Barcelona, and the honor of the city is La Virgen de las Mercedes. So, you know, in a way, I'm in the home of Obatalá. This is the Orisha I have in my head. You know, I'm a son of Obatalá. You know, everything I do in music in my life is based on this. I don't try to force nothing. Mm-hmm. When I feel something that doesn't fit, mm-hmm. you know, it's because inside of me and in the spiritual dimension doesn't work. It mm-hmm. doesn't work there. There's no reason to push mm-hmm. and to make pressure. Because why? Because it's going to be a hit. It's going to be a good selling record. No, I don't look the music in that kind of way. I don't look the art. I don't look the life in this kind of way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, I have a little conflict with people because they always say, oh, you're always crazy about Africa. I say, well, this is the only thing that touched me. The more I learn, more I know I don't know nothing.
I'd actually like to put this in a little historical context, if I could. I recently finished Alicia Castro's book on Anacaona, and she was talking about how things were almost 80 years ago, where they were starting to do some Afro-Cuban music in public, but there were very firm boundaries between what was permissible to play in public and what have to be kept private at the time.
Well, I don't know if you finished your question, but I grabbed some phrase of your point. I need to say, there's no reason for nothing musical and art to have it have some art artistic dimension to be whole, to be sacred. You know, the ceremony needs to be sacred, but the music is music.
Now, where I was heading with the question, back then they had actually even changed some of the rhythms so that they weren't too close to what was being done ceremonially. Have all of those boundaries evaporated, or are there still boundaries that you observe in the creative process?
Well, you know, I personally see, you know, the people, well, I can talk about Cuba now, you know, I've been to Cuba, to do my ceremonies and all the stuff, but you know, more and more it's more difficult to go there. But anyway, the point is, you know, the development of the music we use in our ceremony is pretty much in a way the same of what we use in a public. The only difference is the drummer we play. You don't need, well, you can do it, but if you have some respect, it's better don't play with the sacred drum in public. Mm-hmm. Because when you play with the sacred drum, it became a sacred ceremony. Because the player, they're all the same. They need to have we call in Cuba, se tienen que lavar las manos. They need to wash the hand to play the sacred drum. Mm-hmm. But if you play a regular drum, like by LP, bata, or something like this, the only thing you need to learn is the rhythm. But the point is, when you learn this rhythm, most of the time you still learn because most of the time you're involved in the religious ceremony. Mm-hmm. And outside of this, you play it for some musicians play in a band or in a project in a folkloric ensemble, but you know it's no secret around this. It's what it is. If some people, let's put it away. If you see a folkloric ensemble, if they don't play the rhythm in the way they used to play in the sacred ceremony, they're no good. They're bad players. You know, if they try to, well, they can invite something like the new concert or play three bata together. Yeah, but they need to figure out a way to go closer to the traditional rhythm, because if not, it's something completely different. It's like when you play three congas, you have some montuno, but when you develop some rhythm, you have the pattern, but you move around. But with the bata, it's more complex because it's what it is. You know, it's like, you know, the people in Nigeria, they come to Cuba sometimes to listen to the traditional way to play bata drums, because they, in Nigeria, yeah, this kind of drummer, they evolve, I don't know if I said right, they have evolution, they have a kind of strong evolution, and they don't play in the traditional way we play in Cuba. Mm. And this is, I don't know if I answered your question, but this is what came to my mind.
From a composer's perspective, and I'm asking you this because you do draw from so many other sources in your compositions, what sort of filters do you use when you're considering what to incorporate up against and into what you're using from your own spiritual roots?
You know, it's simple, man. I listen to the voices on the ancestors. Maybe it sounds too naive. Mm-hmm. But it's what it is. For example, you know, I work in a piece here in my little studio to have one idea of how I'm going to be my next record. You know, I do some sampler by myself. He was, you know, a friend of mine is a singer from South Africa. His name is Davis Arame. I want to invite him for my next record. He's almost 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in London. He sent me a vocal track, clean. In the beginning, I had some idea of how I want to do this kind of, you know, deeply in Africa. You know, I end the song maybe 1 minute before you call. It was completely straight to Africa, South African Zulu music. And I don't even know how the guitar player play. If I want to listen to the composition, sound like a Zulu player. So with the guitar players, guitar from South Africa, the drummers, and in the beginning, the foundation of my idea was reggae with Yoruba tradition. And I don't have reggae, I don't have traditional Afro-Cuban rhythm on there. So this is the way I work. I follow, well, let's put it more scientific way. I follow my instinto. Do they speak a little Spanish, no?
Mm-hmm.
Instinto, I say instant, no?
Okay.
In English, no?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't force myself to go, okay, I need to put the rhythm of Opatala with a bass player line and bass in some torque cutting. No. It's come to me. Most of the time, you know, when I write instrumental music, sometimes comes the melody, sometimes comes the bass line. I really love bass line. I really love groove. I love, you know, rhythm because I start as a percussion player. I feel myself percussion player. I love to play piano. This is why I play the way I play.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my limitation as a piano player make myself a walk in a direction. I became a percussion player. I love to play piano. I'm happy with this. Because I found my way, I found my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm happy with the voice I hear.
Mm-hmm.
when I hear myself.
Yeah.
Because it's I feel it's bass in the drum, and this is what I really love.
Mm-hmm.
When I write music, I always have the picture in front, but I don't force nothing. Sometimes come the color first, sometimes come the drawing, sometimes come everything. But this is the harder way when everything comes together, because I don't be able to write everything at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me because I need to write first and play after. Because if I record, you try to transcribe this, it's cost me, you know, it take me a lot of time. And in the end, I became boring to try to transcribe this, the music I record. So this is why I prefer to write first and play what I write after. I don't know if I answered your question.
Actually, as I was listening to your answer, I'm going to take the opportunity to ask a couple of follow-ups, because in the middle of it, you mentioned your love for the bass, for example, and looking over the popular side of Afro-Cuban music going back almost to the beginning, a lot of the most transformative figures in the music happen to be bassists. Ignacio Pinheiro was Septeto Nacional.
Yeah.
Arsenio Rodriguez was known as a tracero, but he also played bass. Cachao, of course, Israel Lopez, and more modernly, Juan Fromel. Is this just a coincidence that all of these gentlemen were bass players, or do you think there's some common thread there that...
Other people, but it's right for me. You know, all these music, they're based in the drum.
Mm-hmm.
And because all these people, Arsenio, Lili, Chapotin, Cachao, all these people first listen to the drum, the rumba, the bata,
mm-hmm.
the abacua. If you go deeply in this kind of Cuban tradition and African tradition, Makuta, Nyongo, you know, all this kind of rhythm, if you listen, it's always a low drum. And when you listen, for example, the rumba parrot,
take this over to the jazz side of the equation for just a moment. Traditionally, Afro-Cuban jazz has always drawn very liberally from the dance rhythms, the mambo, the guajira, the rumba, the son. In more recent years, though, when songo and timba came along, if I compare what's happening now to what was happening back with the mambo and the guajira, it seems that very little of these newer rhythms are finding their way into use by jazz artists. Do you have an opinion about why that is?
Well, you say barely, compared
to, say, the mambo or the guajira or the rumba, just for example.
You know, it's there. You know, for the people that use this, especially the people who come from Cuba, you know, because with the timba, you know what I mean, timba, no?
Yes.
Timba is American music, Earth, Wind & Fire, Chicago, Toto, Comodoro, with rumba. It's pretty much, this is the way I describe timba. Because everything is faster. The guajira, the son montuno, the BPM is slow. It's, you know, 96, 85, 100, maximum. Yeah, more like what the people in the United States call Latin jazz, or what the people in the world call Latin jazz. But when you go in the timba side, you see how fast they play. This is why the timba never became successful in the world. Because it's too much information for people's brain. And you know, it's too much, in my opinion, it's too much, even if I do it sometimes. It's too much because it's too much quote note. You know, horn do quote note, the bass player do quote note, and the conga do quote note, the drummer do quote note. You know, actually, the foundation, I need to go back again, is the rumba. The rumba and the abacua. Because they use these to create bass line. With the foundation, I go back to the early question. The foundation of rumba with the Western and African American groove. In the African American groove, it comes from Africa, from the desert blue, from Mali, from Morocco, from some part of Senegal. You know, and it's still there, but more and more. You know, the people try to use more the unmetered way. I'm not so fan of this because I love groove. Our groove in the rumba, in the mambo, in the guaracha, in the somontuno, in the cha-cha-cha, the danzón, is a 4-4, 2-4, maximum 6-8 or 12-8. When you have 7-4 or 13, 25, all this, you know, this is more the Middle East side. And you know, and in the beginning, the Latin jazz was more for dancing. And now, some people do more in the intellectual way. And well, I need to include it myself sometimes. and you know, I feel it. You know, we lost a little bit of this kind of tradition, but I need to say, it's still there.
Yes, interestingly, there's a movie on tour in the United States now called La Epoca that talks about a number of the rhythms prior to the label salsa appearing that you very seldom hear bands playing distinctly anymore, and covers that history. I am gathering from what you're telling me that that's probably an international phenomenon, not just happening in the United States.
Yeah, it's in the same culture. But you know, but it's simple. You know, look, we make interview by phone. Thank you to Graham Bell. So, but it's now it's, everything is way beyond. Everything is by Skype, is Facebook or Twitter, all this crazy scene. You know, the people almost don't talk face to face. It's all a virtual conversation. And the same thing happened with the art. You know, that, if we go deeply inside of the question, everybody needs to go to the root. Everybody tried to make something different, but it's nothing different. It's all it's a combination of spices. Different spices, they combine it. The people try to combine in the way they feel, based on what they live. And some people try to combine crazy spices. They don't even know how the taste of the spice. But the foundation of the music, of the art today, is still the tradition. You need to learn the tradition to make something crazy, or I'd say new. For me, nothing is new. But let's say with different tastes. Do you follow me?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. This is what I feel. This is what I feel. This is why I love to go to Africa and sit in the street and see a guy play a bamboo flute. I say, wow, so beautiful. This guy don't know what happened in New York. That guy don't know what happened in Amsterdam or in Tokyo. This guy just play what his ancestors tell him. And the ancestor, the only thing the ancestor do is try to pass the message. The legacy. Back in the day, passed to another, and some people, basically, for example, I'm from Cuba, I used to live in the States, I used to live in Mexico, I used to live in Paris, I used, you know, now I live in Barcelona. I live in Ecuador. I try to breathe and I keep inside of me all the tradition I hear all my life until today. Of course, when I create some music, something gonna come out, but based in the tradition. And actually based in the tradition and with the picture I see in the moment. These computers, people with a lot of crazy attitude sometimes, crazy natural disasters, economical crisis, but sometimes is more mental crisis than economical crisis. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you create music, when you translate this to art, it's gonna come out with different flow. Mm-hmm. But the foundation is the same, man. Nothing changed. Just bebop gonna be bebop. Mm-hmm. Rock gonna be rock and roll. Gonna be rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Blues gonna be a blues. Mm-hmm. Son Montuno gonna be a son Montuno. Cha 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 gonna be a cha cha cha. If you combine all these spices, maybe you come out with something. I don't wanna say it's new, but you're gonna come out with something. Because for example, the hip hop, well, the R&B, the hip hop, well, this is kind of, this is not so new, but it's a mother. But if you go to South Africa, you listen to hip hop on the beats 100 years ago. If you listen to the beats the people use in the hip hop, you go to Togo, Ghana, Benin, you listen to these beats played in the drum. The only thing is some people translate to different sound and became kind of new style, but the foundation is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Having said that, what's your take on since you're a pianist, what's your take on the evolution of standard piano tumbaos in Cuban music?
Well, we're back to the early question.
Mm-hmm.
If some percussion player can play with seven congas,
mm-hmm.
so you try to play around the clave. It's a lot of way to play around the clave.
Mm-hmm.
The Cuban clave, because it's a lot of claves.
Sure.
And I disagree with this arrogant way of, the only clave is the Cuban clave. Shut up, man, guys. Go to Africa, you go to a village in Dakar, you're going to listen to people play millions of claves. But, we have our self-esteem in terms of Cuban. It's so high, and we're expecting everybody to play around our clave. And we got the flag really high. But the more we develop to play around the clave, more crazy gonna be the tumbao. But that doesn't mean it's gonna be more deeply. Do you understand what I say?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, because you see the timba, how crazy is the tumbao.
Mm-hmm.
But when the people wanna enjoy, they go back to the 1950s. The 40s and 50s in the city and play the simple Lili Martini and Peruchi tumbao,
mm-hmm.
and Bebo tumbao,
mm-hmm.
or Arsenio tumbao. Because what Lili did was a pass, what Arsenio played in the trance to the piano. And he developed based in the possibility of you have 10 fingers. And now the development became play the tumbao as a quinto player of the rumba cycle. Do you understand what I say, please? if going the timba direction, because the BPM is kind of fast.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a rumba. It's like a rumba. It's kind of like a rumba. It's like a Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even, rumba. Because the cycle of rumba, you know about the cycle of rumba. Right?
Yes, yes.
Jambu, Wawunko, Columbia, Jiribilla.
Yes.
You know, now the people play in a Columbia Jiribilla. Really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for people to play in the Jambu way, but it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the most beautiful music in the world is the ballads, the slow music. Mm-hmm. One of the most beautiful rhythm that we have is the danzón. And the jambu.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have time to listen every note. You have time to sing between notes. What happened with the Columbia and Irivilla, you don't have time to sing between notes. What you see, if you feel something is the packet, the interesting thing of the packet is how impressive and how tight is going to be the section. Horn section or rhythm section of the breaks. But it's good for musicians or for people who love complex music. For the regular people, they say, okay, one song, two song, third song, slow, man, please.
Mm-hmm.
And this is personal, what I feel. I don't remember your question, but this is what I feel.
One final question, Omar. In addition to your current Africanos group, are you working on any other projects presently?
Oh, yes. I finished a solo record. It's out already. It's called Calma. It's a solo piano with a little bit of sampler, a little bit of electronic, and Fender Rhodes. It's kind of, it's a way I feel to do a solo piano. Play up to the end. I don't know if you have this record. You don't have it?
Actually, I recently heard it, yes. And it was a very different mood from your two previous recordings. I liked it very much.
Okay, you know, but this is, in a way, I'm 45, man. I don't know how old you are. Maybe you're in your 50, no? or 40 late.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but I'm in my 40s, 45 I am mm-hmm. now. I feel, you know, the Egyptian way of music, the factored scene, is there. But, you know, I try to translate what I live, what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way I can translate this with complex and full music. I can do, you know, with horns and strings, but I feel it to go to the studio and play my feelings up to the end and became this record. I work in another project in May. I plan to record in May with an Italian trumpet player, to duet with Paolo Fresso.
Mm-hmm.
And I plan to record another record with Mola Sila, duet. Traditional song from Senegal with a contemporary language. Play together based on our friendship. It's beautiful when you have this love. You share love with a musician in a musical context and in the spiritual context. And I want to go to record my next big ensemble record in May in New York. It's going to be in 2013 because it's going to be kind of big production. It's going to call Up the Electric. It's going to be based in the influence I have of Kano Blue inside of my heart. And the music is based in a Kano Blue record. It's going to be interesting because if some people know the record, they're going to recognize some moment of the record. But I don't want the people recognize the record.
So you won't be covering Miles, but you'll be sort of inspired.
I'm never going to cover anybody. I don't have knowledge to do this. I don't feel it. And in the second time, in the third, I think for me, playing music of a master is, you know, it's like a, you know, it's like a sacred ceremony. You don't be able to show out the sacred ceremony to people, you know? Even if some people know. But, you know, I think he kind of blues is like when I listen to Miles, when I listen to Monk, you know, when I listen to Chopin, you know, I learn from them the more I can, but I never gonna play what they play. Even if I learn, sometimes I play in home just for you know, around me, I love this song. But no. I'm gonna. Maybe sound too arrogant, but it's not in that direction. It's more respect for what they did, so, than play something they did.
Thank you very much, Omar.